Happy New Year from the entertainment capital of the world, Las Vegas. I'm Christopher Calloway, your host for Creator Talks, the interview show for comic book aficionados. To start off 2021, I have a guest returning to the show I have not spoken to since those carefree days of 2017. My guest is Zach Kaplan, comic book creator and writer, known for his sci-fi comics Eclipse, Port of Earth, The Lost City Explorers, and Join the Future. The first three of these titles have all been optioned for a television series. I asked Zach, is that common? And reflecting upon those titles, Zach discusses why he selected the artistic collaborators that he worked with and why they were best suited for each series. Zach Kaplan loves the game of poker, and I ask him, how is he coping during the pandemic not being able to go to casinos in LA to play poker? Is he playing through Zoom? I also ask Zach about using psychology in poker, and is there a movie or book that does a really good job at representing the game of poker? I ask Zach how much the psychology of poker plays into his comic book writing, and we discuss his latest work coming out in trade this January, Join the Future, a sci-fi western. Plus, Zach gets a chance to answer the fun questions I ask all my guests since he did not have the opportunity the first time that we interviewed. He answers my 9 questions, and I do explain why there are 9 questions now. I ask him about his favorite birthday, island book, beverage of choice, what's his beef, and his guilty pleasure. And so without further ado, please join me in welcoming Zach Kaplan, creator and author of Join the Future, here now on Creator Talks. Well, Zach, welcome back to Creator Talks.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
It has been a long time. It was the early days of the show. I was on my 12th show, and you were on your first comic book series.
That's very likely.
It was February 9th, 2017.
Wow.
That's how long ago it was. And I think the same year I saw you at Heroes Con.
I would have been in the first arc of Eclipse, I think.
That's right.
Starting the second, I don't know.
Yeah, I think we were talking about the trade.
How young and innocent I was. I have so much advice to tell myself 4 years ago. So many warnings. And maybe there's some hopeful, maybe all the things that I worried about along the way. I was worried about all the wrong things. That's how they get you. Yes.
Now, I have to ask, what would you tell yourself? What were the things you were worried about that just don't matter? And what were the things that did matter that you didn't know about?
I think you put a lot of pressure on yourself when you make your first series and you find any creators out there who find their first whiff of attention at any level, you suddenly feel eyes on you and you haven't felt that before. And so I think it's hard not to, whatever way your personality allows you, to be a perfectionist in some ways. And I think creators might find different ways. I think they feel pressure. And I think that you don't need to feel as much pressure as you're putting on yourself. It's a much longer game. And you do not need to worry so much about the particular small moment in front of you. But I think from the bigger moments, it does help to take advantage. You know, I think I got very excited about how well Eclipse did and how well Port of Earth did. And I wish I had branched out a little faster and done more things. I really doubled down and tripled down on those series, which was a lot of fun. But I would have liked to have tried to take advantage. There were some things that, some opportunities that I saw that I kind of decided I didn't have time for, and I would have rather. So I guess all in all, it's more of a numbers game and a relationship game and a longer game. These are small lessons, but I think very easy to get micro-focused and short-term focused and less like long-term focused. Any of that make any sense?
It does, but you've done a lot though. Eclipse, Port of Earth, The Lost City Explorers, you know, and now you have the next trade coming out, Join the Future. You've done a lot.
I'm very greedy. It's not about how much you do. I think that sometimes putting a lot of pressure on yourself becomes time consuming in and of itself. It's a more enjoyable experience to do as much as you can and spread yourself, and not to the point of exhaustion or overworking, but write a script and move on. And I think put a lot of pressure on myself, and that probably prevented me from doing other things that I wanted to do that I probably could have done. It's a personal experience. Also, It's just the newness of being a first-time creator, and now I'm a fourth-time creator.
When I saw you at HeroesCon, which, God, it seems like it was so long ago,
yeah,
I got a nice piece out of Eclipse. It was the end of Chapter 6. Those of you who have read it, look at your trade. It's that nice page where the tank has broken through the wall.
Yeah, that's a great shot.
And the faces are melting, and yeah, it's... It's a beautiful shot. It wasn't long after that, I reached out to Giovanni Timpano to do the art.
Timpano, he's the artist of Eclipse and just so amazing. He's inspired by Mobius and Darrow, just super, super detailed and really great. Yeah.
He is. And I said, are you doing commissions? He goes, yes. I said, oh, okay. I said, how about the Lone Ranger? He says, let me give you four thumbnail sketches. And he says, which one do you want me to do? I said, okay, I'll take that one. It was the Lone Ranger sliding down a hill. So the rocks are kicking up and everything. But it was amazing how he did that. And then he would show me the process. He would send me updates. So I have in various stages how this thing developed from a thumbnail to a pencil to the finished inks. It was really cool.
He's great. He's such a pleasure to work with. And he's so creative and so good. Crazy enough, we've all lost him for just a sliver doing... comics for the Call of Duty video games.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And he's having a ton of fun. That whole world is just huge. You know, the Call of Duty.
Oh, yeah.
And so he's having a blast just making little mini comics in the Call of Duty and having all the video gamers just go nuts over his characters. So he's having fun. Well, we'll get him back in comics soon enough.
But you've worked with great people. And another one, Andrea Moody, who I had on my show 2019. He worked on Port of Earth. He did the art. He is such a nice guy, and he is so bubbly and enthusiastic, isn't he?
Yes, bubbly, and he just is a love of people and a love of comics. Nothing shakes that guy. He's just a delight, just always happy and just a ton of fun to work with. Yeah, we had a blast making Port of Earth.
And both of those were Top Cow, and then you moved over to Aftershock, and did the Lost City Explorers with Alvaro Saraceca.
He was really great too, and he's gone on to do some really cool things since then. You know, I needed someone for that book, could capture the young adult style, but in a very mature way. There are a lot of artists that do YA that's very YA, and I needed someone that could capture the young adult, but we were kind of going for a modern Goonies. For those of you who don't know Lost City Explorers, it's a group of modern teenagers who go looking for the lost city of Atlantis underneath Manhattan. So very much Goonies or Stranger Things, but modern, and he did a great job on that.
I'm just wondering why the shift from Image to Aftershock.
I've actually been talking to Top Cow, and we would love to do more. It was just, I knew the guys who started Aftershock. As I was going into 2018 or 2019, I was still working on Port of Earth and Eclipse at Top Cow. So my slate felt very full, and I was excited to branch out, and I loved what Aftershock was doing. I mean, they had only been around for a couple of years, but they were taking the industry by storm. I knew Lee, and I'd known Mike, and I reached out to them and, you know, said, hey, I have some ideas. I'd love to talk to you, and I pitched them a couple ideas, and they loved them, and so I started with my second publisher. So it just worked out that I had a lot of stuff going on with Top Cow, and then, you know, switched over to do... Lost the Explorers and join the future with Aftershock. And I would very much like to do more with Top Cow. I think that will happen. They're both great publishers.
Every one of those books were picked up to be made into screenplays. Is this common? Does this happen like that?
No, that does not happen. I've been very fortunate, and God willing, I'll continue to be fortunate. I'm very glad that there are people in Hollywood who saw the potential to adapt all of these. It's very exciting, especially... Port of Earth has moved the fastest. This is at Amazon Studios now. They have a showrunner and they've written a pilot, and things are moving along very well. So, you know, for those of you who don't know, film and TV, developing something from a book or a comic into a TV show, it takes a lot of time and a lot of hoops. There's a lot of chances for things to go awry. So I just keep holding my breath and watching as everything moves forward. It's all, you know, been very exciting for all the projects. I don't think that's too normal, but we are on the flip side. We are in a bit of a golden age of comics, and we are in a golden age of comic adaptations and film and TV. I mean, we've seen more adaptations from comics into film and TV in the past 5 years than probably 10 or 15 years before that. All the streamers coming online and the opportunities just exploding, there's been a real appetite. And I think Walking Dead really set the precedent that you can take a comic and turn it into a really big TV show. The secret's out. I think you're going to continue to see more of it. It's an exciting time to be making comics and making comic book TV shows.
It is. And it's also the golden age of streaming as well. So they're looking for content, and now's a great time for them to pick up your work. And we're all stuck at home. You're stuck at home, I take it. How are you making out with poker? I know that's one of your great loves. Are you playing by Zoom? How are you doing that?
Oh, how dare you. I've had to put it on hold. I've got a group of guys that we would play regularly, and I would occasionally go hopping around to other home games or home tournaments in Los Angeles here, and can't do that anymore. So I play on an app with a few buddies, but for the most part, I've just had to bide my time like everything else. But it will come again.
Now, I know you play in LA. Have you ever come to Vegas to play poker?
I have, but my own ego got the best of me, I should say, because Vegas is a very easy town to make money at in poker if you have no heart. There are a lot of tables on the strip where people, after one too many drinks, will just come to the table and play, and they can't see straight. And it's very easy to sit at one of these tables and just make a lot of money and win a lot. But I have too much heart and too much ego. I'm not playing really to make money. I want to play to beat really good players. So I always find myself going to the most competitive card rooms. Back in the day when I would go to Vegas, I would always go to, well, Caesars. I'm talking maybe 5 years ago, 4 years ago, Caesars and Aria, and really try to find hard games to test myself at. And I would do okay. But yes, I have played a couple times in Vegas. Way back when, I played higher stakes. I just couldn't do that anymore. I have a good $200 game to have a little fun and try to win some money, but I can't do the big stakes games anymore.
I'm wondering how much of poker is psychology. How much are you reading the other person, seeing if they're bluffing, watching the eyes?
All of it. The first level of poker is you play your cards. The second level of poker is you play your opponent's cards. And the third level of poker is you play the cards that you want your opponent to think you have. So these are all just the different levels of psychology. I actually believe that there's even a fourth level, which is the mental toughness of the long match. You know, I actually once did poker consulting for a movie. They didn't listen to anything I had to say. I tried to explain to them that poker has nothing to do with winning one hand like you see in all the movies. Uh-huh. Boxing match. And the best way to portray it would be to show the different knockdowns and who can last, who doesn't get shaken off their game, who doesn't go on tilt and lose it, who can survive the marathon and take the bad beats that everyone gets and then deliver the right knockout blows. So it's very much about, can you stay focused? Can you not get too frustrated? And can you obviously read your opponent when they're frustrated? And I used to tell my friends whenever they'd come play poker, it's a very easy game to learn. The only thing you have to be willing to do is look at someone you like and be willing to lie to them to take their money. And if you can do that, then you can play poker. Because if you know they're beat and you're like, oh, I got you beat, Chris. I feel bad. I'm not going to bet. I have a full house. I know you can't win, but I'll just take what's in front of me. No problem. If you do that, you can't play poker, because when the role is reversed, they will take you for everything you're worth. So you just have to be willing to take someone's money. But yes, look, you get me talking about poker. I could talk about it all night.
Well, I have some more questions about that. Now, since you consulted on a movie about poker, have you seen a movie, read a book, that does a good job in representing a poker game within the story? That is, clearly the writer knew something about the game.
Not too much. I did not appreciate the Bond portrayals of poker. Ed Norton, Rounders is kind of the quintessential movie, but that's more about hustling and cheating. Molly's Game is more about running a poker game and less about the game itself. There might have been a couple indie films that came and went that I haven't really seen. I haven't really seen it. I'd love to do it myself. I don't know that it would make a good comic. It could be done in film the right way. But to me, I always wanted that level of psychology. You know, I always wanted James Bond and the guy that bleeds from his eye or whatever. Like, he's got to tell that he bleeds from his eye or something like that. And I mean, of course, I think that guy's got four of a kind, and James Bond has a straight flush. And for people who play poker, this type of situation, it plays itself. There's absolutely no game theory or psychology if two people have the near best hands in the world. You know, the odds of getting either of these hands are 1%. So if you wake up with this hand, you're just going to put as much money as you can. So the guy that happened to be lucky enough to get the better hand than the other guy, this is not game theory. What would have been great is if the villain has nothing, but he knows that James Bond has nothing. So he is bluffing James Bond for everything he has. And the guy on the side is saying, the bad guy knows James has nothing. He knows James has nothing. He's trying to push James off the hand. James only has a king high. He cannot call. He cannot keep going. And James keeps calling. He keeps raising. And they're like, what is he doing? James has king high. He has nothing. And it turns out that the other guy was bluffing. He had queen high, and James knew it. He knew the guy was going for a straight and miss. He knew his king high was better than queen high. He read the guy like a book. He knew he was bluffing. He knew what he had. And he put all his money on nothing. Not on the best hand, but on the worst hand. That's poker. And I would love to see those kinds of scenes in something out there. If you're listening and you know of a movie or TV show, then hit me up on Twitter or Facebook and tell me what I should check out, because I'd love to see it.
Now, how does poker influence your approach to writing a story? I remember you had told me about Eclipse. It came to you coming back from dealing at a casino in LA, and it was, you know, nighttime, and you were thinking about the life of people coming out at night.
That's right.
How does it continue to influence all your work?
Well, I think it's about character. Different people are looking for certain fulfillments in life. I very much like to think about characters and what kind of type of person they are. I like to think about types and patterns. And, you know, is somebody looking for glory? Is somebody looking just to win and be tough? Is somebody looking to outthink, like super brainy, cerebral? Is someone trying to avoid danger and nervous? You know, someone there just to have a good time and they're like everyone's best friend. I like to think about the different types of character. And I think that, you know, reading a character and understanding a character in both that psychological element in both poker and writing are very similar. So I would say I use that muscle for both.
You have completed Join the Future, the first arc. Now it's coming out in trade, 120 pages. Is that due out January 19th? Is that the right date?
That would be, I think, bookstore date. I think it's January 5th for shops, mm-hmm. and online or bookstores maybe 2 weeks later. That 19th sounds right. January 2021.
New artist on this series for you.
Peter Kowalski.
Peter Kowalski. That's much easier to say than decipher the name. Yeah.
It's the Polish way of saying Peter, basically. Okay. Peter Kowalski, yes. He's fantastic. Well, God, what a talented artist. And he's been in the business for a while. I saw his work on Bloodborne with Brad Simpson, which is why I was inspired to hire the pair of them. And they're just unbelievable. The lines, the character work, the landscapes, the different feels for this book, they're fantastic.
And in this sci-fi Western, these ultra-modern megacities reward millions of their citizens with everything they want in life, everything they need, their healthcare, their food, their clothing, everything's taken care of. But there's a reason why they do it. They're competing in an economic power struggle in which population is the key. And people are being pretty much coerced, highly recommended to move in, leave their towns outside the city and move in. And that's where our heroine Clementine comes in, who lives in the Midwest town of Franklin. They're getting pressured, and she has to step up, and we find out why. It's a sci-fi Western. Why a sci-fi Western? That's a great combination.
I think they're pretty similar, actually, when you think about it, sci-fi and Western. I think they're two of the genres that most explore our relationship with progress, perhaps more than any other two genres. You can tell me what you think about that. But I mean, science fiction, especially futuristic science fiction, explores kind of what happens when we move forward and into the future and what sacrifices we make. And Westerns are actually very much about this, the life on the frontier and civilization moving in and conflict between the way the ranchers and the wayward souls of the Wild West have lived, as and then civilization and the railroads and everything coming to change their way of life. So I found a lot of duality to these two types. And I was always interested with how we see megacities in the future in lots of sci-fi stories, and we never see what's going on outside of those megacities. What has the massive urbanization of these megacities done to the other way to live, which is in a small community? I think this kind of question raised all sorts of interesting existential questions of our reliance on technology, our alienation when we're thrust together in too large of a city, which is kind of what do we lose from that small town community. And this was never meant to be a red state or blue state kind of analysis. I grew up in a small town and I know there are small towns all over the country. And so it was just more so about the trend of technological reliance, urbanization, and changing the way we live that sometimes we don't even realize we've given up.
Yeah, that is definitely hinted at or mentioned in the story about people seem to be losing something when they go into that mega city.
Yes. Yes. The story opens with this very kind of glossy promo of these hosts inviting people to come join the city and how wonderful it is. And I actually believe very much in a lot of the ideas that are being expressed. I think that people should have choice. And I think the one thing the future doesn't give us is choice. If you really take a step back, the future just comes at you and says, join. And suddenly smartphones and social media and data and all sorts of things are being thrust upon us. And we're not being asked. The future is just coming for us. And you end up sacrificing and losing it. So that was kind of the exploration I wanted to see, those ideas.
That kind of reminds me, back in Delaware, there was a big financial company, and people who live there know what I'm talking about. They're no longer there. They've changed names, but a lot of people work there, and they had everything you would need there. Your dry cleaning, restaurants, everything. You didn't have to leave. You could stay and work. And that's great to have that employer have all these things there for you for convenience, you know, to make it easier for you. But at the same time, I think it's like, we don't want you going anywhere. We got everything you need right here.
It's a little weird. Well, not only is it weird and unsettling that someone wants you to rely on them so much that you can't rely on yourself. It is a parasitic kind of setup that they want you to be so reliant that you can't leave. The corporations that give their employees exercise classes are doing that so you will actually work more. That if our employees leave our campus and go exercise somewhere else, they will actually work less. If they stay here, they might actually work 10 minutes more a day. So it's in our best interest to give them an exercise class. I don't know that I buy. Maybe they also attract better people, but perhaps that's also true. But it's clearly a self-motivated decision, not for the interest of their employees, but for the interest of the greater good and the corporate entity. And, you know, you go to your Barnes and Noble and you buy your books and everything super cheap. And then you go to the small bookstore and you kind of talk to the person and you find all sorts of interesting discoveries that you wouldn't have found. And some people will say, what's a small bookstore? You know, they don't even know anymore. I mean, the bookstores are being obliterated left and right, especially after this pandemic. So those kinds of elements, nothing in particular. I think small towns can offer a sense of kind of neighborly friendliness, certainly self-sufficiency. This town in particular has veered that way. It's not just a small town. They've actually grown in the future so against the megacities that they've actually starved themselves of any technology or anything advanced. They're actually almost veering towards not Amish. You know, they still have cars and things, but they are definitely very self-sufficient, this small community, and they've sworn off technology.
Well, you've certainly, Zach, stuck the landing on this one yet again, because you told me way back that there's truth and fantasy in Eclipse, and science fiction taps into things in our lives, and this does just the same. We are being taken over by technology in some cases, and just like the things you mentioned, social media, and this speaks to that.
Yeah. And it was really interesting to do it through the story on this young girl, Clementine, who is an older teenager, 17, 18, in this small town. And that moment where we would all be setting off on our own, she very much has adopted the way of the town, although never really thinking about why. And then the pressure that the megacity is putting on the small town culminates in a real tragic catastrophe for Clementine. And she finds herself, these two worlds are colliding, and she's in the middle of it. And she's making a choice to defend her community and fight back. That raises all sorts of interesting questions about how is she going to do that? Her father has been very strict about technology and swearing it off. But, you know, she's going up against the local law enforcement, have allied themselves with representatives from the megacity. And they're armed with all sorts of fancy sci-fi gadgets and technology and weapons. And how can a girl, a young girl with no training and just a six shooter, go up against all these advanced soldiers? You know, does she join the technological advancement to fight back? Or would that essentially be them winning as well? It was an interesting internal drama or thematic drama to explore for her as a character.
And people don't have to wait now issue to issue. You have it out in the trade coming in January, so they can read the whole thing at once. And you have some more planned, I'm sure.
Well, it's interesting. You know, we initially thought we were just going to do 5 issues. And that was the way I pitched it. Very well received in March. And immediately, as we were seeing the numbers come in, we started talking about more. And then the pandemic kind of blew up. That conversation always kind of lingered there. And I obviously wrote it that I wanted the first trade to be very contained, so you can read this from start to finish. It is very resolved. But at the same time, there's a lot of world, and Clementine has got quite a story. Yeah, I would love to do more, and Aftershock has seriously considered it. We're not sure. That's the God's honest truth. It's possible, and we'll just have to see. Certainly, if you pick up the graphic novel and you'll love it, let Aftershock and myself know. The more support we have obviously influences the decision. I would like to do more. Time will tell.
I have confidence you can do it because you said the same thing about Eclipse. It was supposed to be just, I think, a mini series, and then it continued for another arc. It's just a really tough time right now. There's just so many things up in the air with the pandemic.
Yeah. But you never know. If there's more to tell and there's more appetite, they find a way. And I wouldn't be the first creator to take a beat and then do more either. So whether we have the trade come out in January, and between that and the market, and we decide to do more right then and there, perhaps we take a beat and then we do more later next year. There's a lot of ways that it could unfold. So I'm hopeful too, but not certain yet. We'll see.
Well, like you said, and I will second this, I've read it. It's a great read, and it is a satisfying read in the one volume. You're not going to be left hanging like, oh, now what? Why isn't there more? You'll be like, okay, I could read this as one story and be very satisfied, not feel cheated.
Yes.
This part of the show, you didn't have a chance to participate in last time because I didn't invent it yet. I didn't have this part yet. This is called Kicking Back with the Creator, where I ask all my guests questions just about them, to learn more about them as people. And I have 9 questions. Why 9? I decide on 9 because 9 is symbolic for completion. So as I get to the end of the interview, I ask these questions. No trick questions, nothing embarrassing. First question, and I know this is a tough one right now, besides poker, because that would probably be the answer, what do you like to do for recreation?
I like my games, my video games. I'm dying to get the PS5 whenever it shows up. I'm very excited about Cyberpunk 2077 coming out. I love all things Cyberpunk, and I saw some mixed reviews, but I think I'll probably take the plunge. I really like open world games to explore. I loved Ghost of Tsushima, things like The Witcher and Red Dead Redemption 1 and 2. Oh, love those. So if I am not spending time with family and or enjoying just some good TV or movies and not playing poker and not writing, I do enjoy losing myself in a good game.
Have you had a chance to stream a bit, binge a little bit during the pandemic?
Yeah, a little bit. I'm enjoying Queen's Gambit.
Great show. I saw the whole thing.
I really like that. I mean, I love all things sci-fi. I love The Boys. I loved Watchmen. The Mandalorian. Good Lord, are they killing that one. I do enjoy my sci-fi TV a lot.
You have great taste. I've seen all those. Thinking back, what was your favorite birthday or memorable if there was no favorite?
I think right before I got married and had kids, I had a big house party with a bunch of friends. My wife threw it for me, and I think we stayed up really late. And there's something about when you buy your first place, you get to throw a house party, and you're not in like an apartment anymore. It's your house and you're throwing a house party. Those are always fun. There was a birthday where we did that after we'd gotten married and had the house, but before we had kids. That was a good birthday.
I know what you mean. That first night in your house, even if it's not a house party, that pizza that you have on the floor is the best pizza you've had in a long time.
We did do that. I think we did Chinese food, but it was on the floor. That's right. Should be on the floor. If you buy a house, if anyone's out there and you're getting your first house, or you're going to get your first house, remember that Chris and Zach said, even if you've got some chairs set up, just eat on the floor. You will not regret it.
You can't have the house and furniture. Come on.
Definitely.
Now, thinking back to your adolescence, junior high, let's say, what posters and or pictures did you have on your bedroom wall?
I don't know that I had posters on my walls. If I had posters, it might have been computer game posters. 13 years old, I was deep into computer games. I loved Monkey Island and Civilization and all the Sierra games, if anybody's out there and knows all these. Everything I could get at, I think it was called Electronics Boutique. The GameStop back then was EB. I would get all sorts of stuff. So I think they came with lots of posters. If I had any posters on in junior high, it was probably video computer games. It never occurred to me if I liked Star Wars or Terminator to hang a poster up of that, but I don't know why.
Now, this is a hypothetical situation. You're stuck on a deserted island. You have one book or a set of related books to read for pleasure. This isn't about survival. You'll get off the island. If you had to have one book or set of books with you, what would it be?
That's a good one. How long am I on this island for?
Well, an indeterminate amount of time. So it'll be a while.
That's really tough. My worry is I'm going to pick something depressing. I found that, especially this past year, that sometimes when I'm feeling down or having a hard time, that actually the best thing to watch or experience is comedy, not drama. So as much as I want to show off my literary prowess or intellect and cite some sort of old tome or something that people go, oh, that's, I feel like Calvin and Hobbes or something that would just allow me to yuck it up and lose myself would actually be the most enjoyable. I will go with some sort of comedy. I think it's important. Too much for me, reading as a creator and writer has been transformed into the process of analysis. It's very hard for me to read something and not be analyzing it and the craft of it. But comedy, I can lose myself in. So I would have to go with something funny. Like Calvin and Hobbes is one of my favorite comic strip comedy kind of things.
Now back to reality, off the island. What is your beverage of choice?
Well, if I'm drinking, it's an old fashioned. And if I'm just drinking, I would say just a good old Coca-Cola. But soda's so bad, so I always go on and off of soda. I mean, I drink coffee. Who am I kidding? I drink 2 or 3 cups of coffee a day. So I drink more coffee probably than I drink water. So maybe coffee is the beverage.
Yeah, that's how I start my day. And I try to cut back and just do like decaf, and I never can seem to, I can never seem to do that. But the old fashions are nice. I do enjoy one of those every now and then.
I do too.
Next question. I haven't asked this one before because I don't want to be negative. But do you have a beef? Like, remember Jay Leno would go on Letterman show and Dave would say, Jay, what's your beef? I don't have a beef per se, but I'll give you an example. I moved to Las Vegas about a year ago and I go out, I buy, let's say, takeout. Okay, that'll be $4.35. All right, come to the window. I give him $5. Perfect. People like to say perfect out here. I don't know if it's a generational thing, a regional thing. I'm like, it's not perfect. If I gave you the exact change, that would be perfect.
You give me a couple old fashions, and then this will be a much easier question to ask. I make it a point to try not to complain about anything and to be a really empathetic and pragmatic person. Mm-hmm. I really find that getting angry about other people's actions or stuff makes me feel bad. I'd rather just not do it. But I will tell you, nothing gets me more frustrated than feeling like I'm being cheated by a company or something. I switched off of AT&T, but my bill would suddenly go up, you know, and then I call customer service and you have to transfer three times and the call drops and you finally get the person and they'd say, well, your promo ended. And I'd say, what promo? You know, there was no promo. And they'd say, there was a promo and now it's ended. And I go, okay, are there any promos right now? And they'd say, no, there's no promos right now. And I'd say, okay, I want you to record this. Send me something that says there are no promos. Put it in the notes. I'm remembering this, okay? Tell me how much it is. That's it. And then 6 months later, you know what happens? It goes up and you call back and you say, don't tell me that some promo ended. They'd say, yes, that's what happened, a promo.
Jeez.
Oh, you gotta be, you know, like this. You're cheating me. I know there was no promo. We did this 6 months ago. Anything like that. I grew up in the Midwest. I really like the kind of do unto others, just be good to one another. And it really, I got a beef when people are just trying to cheat other people for money or cheat other people for opportunity. So that annoys me.
Let me bring you back down. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to get you riled up.
You got me.
What is your guilty pleasure?
Video games.
Playing them too much, maybe?
Oh, God, these games are... I mean, look, I'm a father of two young kids. You know, I got lots of work to do. Ghost of Tsushima takes 100 hours to complete the game. You know, I always feel guilt. And also, I'm a completionist. For those of you out there, that means that I feel compelled to get all 27... Mongolian bear skins that are spread around the whole island or whatever it's going to be, right? So, like, there are 80 noble banners hidden on different mountaintops. It has nothing to do with the story or the battles or anything, but can you find them all? I'm like, oh, I got to find all 80 of these banners. This is going to be great. So I get sucked into the completionist of it all. So it takes me always longer. And it's a guilty pleasure. I feel like I should be reading or working or spending time with the family or doing stuff like that. So I try not to get lost too much in video games. That's definitely a guilty pleasure.
My next question, finish this phrase, I took a risk when?
I took a risk when I lived in the Philippines for a year. I moved to the Philippines. A friend of mine was working at a film school and a production company there. They invited me to come on out. I was very nervous about doing it. I had a life in Los Angeles. My family was in the States. All my friends were here. I graduated film school and I had been out in town doing several things. I was worried that I would lose my place, but it was an adventure and I decided to take the leap. So I moved and lived abroad for 1 year and it was one of the best experiences of my life for sure. That was a big risk.
So my final question is, what is next for you? And that means either work or pleasure. Personal goals or just work-related goals? What's next?
Well, I just want to keep making comics and trying to be a better creator, trying to tell different stories, expand my understanding of the medium, try to surprise myself in my stories, just make more. I don't know that it's that complicated. I love making comics. I'm very grateful that I get the chance to make comics, and I just hope to keep doing it.
So everyone, join the future coming this January, the trade, 120 pages through Aftershock Comics. Zach, thank you so much for being on Creator Talks.
Thank you, Chris.
And thank each of you for listening to this interview with Zach Kaplan, and please check out his trade, Join the Future. Now, normally this show is out every other Thursday. This being a special day, I released it on New Year's Day 2021. And so I'll be back on January 14th with a brand new interview, this time with the author of a graphic novel about a classical composer, his impact on classical music and on pop culture, and what the book is all about. It's not a straight-up biography. And then 2 weeks after that, I have an interview with an actor and playwright who has written a graphic novel about a great leader in American history. We spend a good deal of time talking about the actor's work in one-man plays and about the people that he's portrayed. Yes, there is talk about the graphic novel, but it is a fascinating story to hear about this person's work. So that's coming up in January. And then in February, I already have things in the works with writers and artists about some very interesting topics, and with book authors about some very interesting topics. So this year, 2021, I won't be having as many interviews with creators, writers, artists, colorists about a single issue comic book coming out or about a Kickstarter. Doesn't mean that I won't, but that'll be less likely. I'm more interested in a graphic novel or a trade collection or a book about comic books. It'll all be more or less comic book focused, but my interest lies more with a person's body of work or something that they have written that covers the history of comics or that covers an entire arc of a particular series that they have written or drawn. I'm looking to push the boundaries a bit of what we get into. I want to bring you something a little different, something that is uniquely Creator Talks. And if you like what you hear, please tell a friend and rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. That's all for now. For Creator Talks, this has been your host, Christopher Calloway. Until next time.